very much, Eimear, and thank you, Paul, for inviting me. It's great to be here, and it's lovely to receive an invitation to read, because it really makes you reevaluate your work and, you know, look at it with a different eye and try and see where the dialogues are between poems and stuff. So I'm really appreciative of that opportunity. I'm probably going to read for about 30 minutes. And one of my favourite American poets, Jack Gilbert, died last week. And in 50 years of writing, he stayed clear of the establishment completely. He only published 4 books. But his work is really extraordinary. And he does this thing. He writes really beautifully about failure. And it's like an alchemy. He turns failure into gold. And I'd like to read just a short poem from his first book, which was Views of Jeopardy, which was published the year before I was born, in 1962. And I'll just say it. In dispraise of poetry. When the king of Siam disliked a courier, he gave him a beautiful white elephant. The miracle beast deserved such ritual that to care for him properly meant ruin. Yet to care for him improperly was worse. It appears the gift could not be refused. It's really well worth looking at his work. It's just fabulous. I'm going to read quite a lot of new work, and I'll read a few poems from this wee book that's available. And I'm going to read a couple of Cork poems. Well, they're poems that have Cork in them, kind of. My father's best friend was a man called John McEwan, who lived in Dundanion Court in Cork. I don't know why I remember that name. We just visited him there once. But at any rate, he was kind of like a shadowy presence in our lives, because we knew he was Dad's best friend, but he never visited because he was afraid of coming over the border. So the border assumed a really big significance in my imagination as a child. And this is called Mother's Bride. And Mother's Bride is the name of a bakery in the north, and they do a great plain loaf, which I think you might call a batch loaf down here. Mother's Bride. Handy with a knife, his preferred medium was Mother's Bride plain toast. This is the way the nuns eat, soldiers. This is the Protestant half. Here's Oma, Belfast, Enniskillen, Dublin, Donegal, with Errigal hastily moulded from Clew Bay, a crumb for an island for every day of the year, and Cork, where John Mack lives. Loch Earn's two narrow slits, Loch Ney a slanty oblong poked right through. A final flourish, grinning his pièce de résistance, was the border, which my frowning mother quickly buttered over, stabbing the bread, drawing the knife out clean. And Astronomy for Beginners is also a Cork poem, in that its genesis was a holiday on Bear Island many, many years ago. Astronomy for Beginners. Bewitched by stars, cool phosphorescence at our feet, we wait knee-deep Atlantic, August 3 a.m, and later, finding one sweater still dry, we stagger home, wearing it together, suddenly Siamese, tripping, laughing, taking turns at sleeves and carrying our bundle of wet clothes, the plough, our torch and guide, with other constellations we can't know, but promise to learn by heart by Christmas. Flannery O'Connor, another American writer who I really love. She's a short story writer, amazing writer, but she started out as a cartoonist. At school she did fantastic cartoons, and you can see them if you go onto the Paris Review website. They're extraordinary. But she said that many disciplines can help your writing, but especially drawing. She says anything that helps you to see, anything that helps you look, and seems like good advice. And I'm just about 3 weeks ago I was down the west coast mostly in Mayo and Galway for a week, and I had bought a new camera, and it wasn't until after I'd written the poem kind of surprised me, and it wasn't until afterwards that I thought that's to do with looking at things through a camera, you know, and it kind of made me think about what Flannery O'Connor had said about finding new ways of seeing things. So this is quite a long sequence of sort of haiku type poems. They're each little tiny things, and I'm only going to read a few of them. But it's called West of Now. October trees are beacons here, from Killary, the V's of valleys blaze. Through brittle leaves of mountain ash, this tune you take the rain. On low stone walls, sparse brambleberries, famine's cul-de-sac. In ditches at this fag end of a season, an odd mumbrisha blooms, a flare still lit. Past Delphi Lodge, this darkness, lake with landscape as receptacle for sky. This dearth of birds, the devil's mother falls across Ben Gorm. Slow miles unreal as land recedes and sky succumbs to sea. In garden suburbs east of now, masked gluttonies of waxwings strip the hedge. I had a conversation with Paul yesterday, and he was telling me that for some months, many years ago, he had worked as a dental assistant, and I work as a dentist, so he was asking me if I'd ever written a poem about dentistry, and I had. And I haven't read this poem for years, and it feels like our younger self, but here we go. Amalgam. I know 867 people orally. I ask them probing questions. They open up to me. They send a guinea pig to test my mettle, and if I'm patient, make the good impression. They bring their friends and family, their children and their granny come. It's pleasant. They open up to me. I don my gloves, stand on my hands and walk the wire with them. Sometimes they bite and spit. I mirror them, refract that light, see past their bones and skin. I outsmart pain, I see them whole and will them smile again. I straighten out their inconsistencies. They open up to me, wider, wider. Close your eyes, I then rip off my mask, extract my fee. To compensate, I sugar them with pieces plucked from me. This poem's called Obad, and Obad is traditionally a kind of an early morning greeting to the dawn. And this is a lazy woman's Obad. And it opens with a wee epigram from Walt Whitman, who says, "Bring the muse into the kitchen." So page 24, Patrick. A man was squeezing oranges in my kitchen. I'm down the corridor in bed, and he is squeezing oranges in my kitchen. From where I lie, I cannot see the man, but I've deduced that he is squeezing oranges. There's something tremendously erotic about a man squeezing oranges. What is erotic is the sound. This man has found my orange squeezer without my prompting. He does not know I know he's squeezing oranges. Lying here, listening to the sound of a man secretly squeezing oranges at 1:09 of a Sunday afternoon, I'm struck by the fact that I've never heard any sound quite as erotic as the sound of a man squeezing. And I'm going to read a couple of breakup poems back to back. The first one was written on the day of the breakup, and the second one a few months down the line. Broken couplets. Today we traded misery for sadness, and I'm glad. While misery begets despair, I know that sorrow passes. You troubled my self-confidence, together we destroyed it. Now I needs must sue my own, and owning it, deploy it. Did we think we discover how our legacies are different? When I remember tendernesses, you recall positions. As for the woman thrusting for your up and coming us, I wish you well. I swear I do. I wish the lady thrush. That's its first public outing, that poem. This one's called Skin. And it's the first prose poem I've ever written, and I didn't set out to write a prose poem, but it just kind of happened. And I love, you know, I read a lot of American poetry, and I think some of the prose poems there are just fantastic. Skin. Today, my teenage godson stretched cling film over the toilet bowl to repay the mother who had pissed him off. He quickly applies the film and puts the lid back down. The ends he smooths along the toilet's neck. My friend, his mother, coughs on right away. He never puts the seat down. Besides, the boy's ham-fisted and a wrinkle in the skin has caught the light. She peels the film off but doesn't say. She finds that she no longer needs, no longer wants to go. My friend talks more than me. She always has. She never touches her coffee till several minutes after I've drained my cup. She claims to like the skin. She eases it back with the back of her spoon and sprinkles sugar in. A skin has formed across the eager space I cleared for you. When I have been distracted, the cup has somehow filled itself again. We drink that one. This poem started off as a thank you note to a friend of mine, Anne McLarney, who's an artist, visual artist, and she lives down in the Mournes, which are really beautiful if you haven't been down there or up there, in fact. But anyway, there's a reference in the poem to a rock pool, and the rock pool in Newcastle is this amazing. It's like a really old-fashioned Lido. It's an outdoor swimming pool with salt water, and it's really, really cold. But you look up and the moors are just there. So a ribbon for Anne McLarney, Newcastle, July 12, 2012. You tender these, one warm hen's egg, a freckled fawn. I thought them brown till then. A small round spirit level, a bubble drum in lurid red hand red, a pencil sharpener, dull metallic grey. Your afterthought, this single pencil pairing, a brittle fan whose fruited bands resplendent rock pool blue. For you, my friend, a ribbon in whatever hue you're choosing, this. This is a sequence of short poems, and I'll just kind of pause slightly between them. It's called Changing Rooms. Have I told you how I was the last in the class to get one? How I was teased for a year? How I knew when I got one the teasing would only get worse? How I longed for and dreaded its purchase in equal measure? My mother's whispered lie, she needs a bra. The Mrs. O'Reilly's dexterous eyes sizing me up. 30, their damning verdict, a cup. From under the counter, little by little, five plain boxes stacked and floating flat on my upturned palms. Our procession facing the shuttered changing room. My mother and Miss O'Reilly hovering. The prickle of white padded nylon, the deep pink rose sewn on with cleavage should be. A pink fog closing in, its crimson fog. And did I ever tell you about my friend who furnished with a bra around the same time in another town in a family of sisters, never having seen one on the line, wore her new bra for months before her mother spotted it, black, on the bedroom floor. Her mother, it transpired, hung them at the back of the airing cupboard. The same friend's sister, kissing a boy and feeling his hand flutter at her chest, turns on the light and puts her glasses on to help him find the thing he had mislaid. My sister, her first child at her breast, noticed she sweated excessively on one side, how she recognised milk issuing from her armpit, an additional nipple present in 1 in 40 women and men, invisible till then, presenting thus in the bathroom mirror, accessory, miraculous. And my friend's South American friend who adopted a child and bottle fed using a tube which was fixed to her nipple, how after a couple of weeks her milk came in, and how her breasts held sway in the bedroom, posing her husband, drenching the marriage bed. My mother's mother made a pact with cancer, whose chop and change concession cost her breast, returned to the consulting room and gravely pressed the surgeon. Lopsidedness felt loathsome. To remove its blameless fellow, how gamely he'd obliged, and how she lived well past her 90th year, robust of bra and girdled to the last. What am I doing now? I forgot to time myself. A couple of years ago, I met a 40-year-old cousin who I didn't know existed, and it was like some sort of 21st century annunciation, and this is my kind of attempt to write about it. Fruit. From a 40-year blue you appeared, more beautiful than any of us, replete with grace, the image of yourself. No lily, nor eagle, nor serpent, nor dove, no bright flames licking your feet, no shaft of light relating you to heaven. In lieu of a scroll, you proffer the scrapbooks your mother compiled, a childhood looking like no one. Look at us now, observe how you stir us, root, branch and leaf, blossom and fruit upon fruit, making good the tree. So, I'll go back to the border again, and this is geography and sweet shops. And it opens with a list of beaches in the northwest of Ireland. Lisfannan, Buncrana, Bundoff, Mullaghmore, Rosnoula. The best places to swim were always over the border. In the car killing time we played I Spy with My Little Eye and Spot the Soldiers. Their camouflage too dark for August grass, something beginning with H, the wee white house, windows for eyes, one either side of the thick red line on the map. We imagined the little old woman, she was always little and old, waking each morning in the south and having eggs for breakfast in the north, and maybe crossing again to clean her teeth and check her hair in the big old bathroom mirror in the south. What accent would she use? Did her cattle prefer southern or northern grass? Where did they give good milk and where did her children go to school and did they like to change their accents too and did they ever get confused? The sea and southern bread and sweets we couldn't get at Auntie Maggie's shop. Skittles, golden crisp and richer, smoother, creamy dairy milk. In the sweet shop in Buncrana, women smile at us and call us refugees. We learn to use our strongest northern accents and look sad. This guarantees free sweets at the beginning. Back home, we never knew when Auntie Maggie'd come to stay. We knew to open the windows when the siren went. We knew, if an inspector called, that this window or that door hadn't been broken before. We knew that Auntie Maggie's blood pressure was bad and that it blew sky high. She'd get bloodshot eyes each time an unattended car appeared outside the shop, but that mostly people forgot and it was nothing, a scare. And then it wasn't, and she'd come to stay, and her maid didn't eat gravy and she didn't have to, and Auntie Maggie's boys could say bad words and nothing happened, and they could eat sweets all the time and she'd say nothing and they were ruined. And when the windows came in, all the sweets in the shop would be ruined too, and even the ones buried at the bottom, and even the ones in the storeroom that didn't have a window would have to be destroyed. But we would have eaten them anyhow, and we could have cried the thought of all that waste. I lived briefly in America and I was really, really homesick, and I used to listen to Irish traditional music and feel miserable. And the apartment I lived in had a fabulous wooden floor, not unlike this, and I just wanted to do set dancing. I wanted to have 8 people to do a set with, and there was nobody else available. So this poem kind of arose out of that, and of course it arose out of that impulse and went somewhere completely different. But there you go. Sometimes dancing. A dance retreat, the chandeliers are hot tonight. Their cut beads bend the golden light like tears. A dance retreat, pass through, dance home, gallop, swing with your partner, change. In her dream she is princess, pale hair coiled in knots. She's trussed in whalebone, small breasts thrust to touch the heavy choker at her throat. A France retreat, she's been trained for this. Shoulders back, the particular angle, chin and throat describe. Balancing heavy books she thought were made for practice, and later mother's precious plates from China. Sometimes dancing, she'll force her eyes up, back, till over the eyebrows barb she sees the golden drops and the rim spins. She does not see the men she dances with, though she feigns attention, smiling. She feels their hands long after they've passed on. When she dances with Clara, she holds tighter than she should, pushes herself beyond giddiness, leans into her a little. Once in her dream, swinging, their bodies locked together and they flew. She woke to a crashing of plates, a tangle of sheets in her narrow bed, the heart galloping. Two of these short poems and then I'll call today. The title of this poem is Translation, and I suppose it refers to translation in the very literal sense of making something out of something else, or even out of nothing, in the sense, I suppose, that all writing is translation, I think. And I suppose I hate saying what a poem's about, because it can close down meanings. If, you know, a poem, sometimes if it's working, it can work at lots of levels. But it's for me, it's kind of arose out of an experience of chronic illness, and it's called Translation. Whole seasons you're losing, what happens? Is there in heaven a roof space where you can collect them? And this next one is a literal, well, it is a translation or a version of a poem called Irish by Paul Celan, and the title in German is Irish with, you know, CH, and I've translated it as Earth Wish. Grant me the way leave across the drawbridge to your sleep, the by your leave to end the wild meanders of your dreams, the privilege now I am fit to split the turf along your breasts and climb come dawn. Thank you.